You all pray with me. O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. Beloved Jesus Christ. Blessed Master. Saints and sages of all religions. I bow to all of you. Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only king. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Amen. We've been working on a new site. I don't care for the name, but it's a blog site that be able to do some postings, both from India, but also will continue as well beyond the pilgrimage. But this is The Pilgrimage Begins. Pilgrimage begins long before you set out foot of the door to go on one. It is best for a pilgrimage to originate as a calling, a deep inner prompting that goes beyond a yearning to travel and see new places. That is because pilgrimage is a journey of the soul that takes on the guise of traveling to holy sites and meeting spiritual personalities. A pilgrim is defined as one who travels to a shrine or holy place as a devotee. And the term pilgrimage is the journey of the pilgrim, which has been in use since the 1300s. Mother Hamilton recommended the book, The Way of the Pilgrim, which chronicles a Russian itinerant traveler who is inspired by St. Paul's admonition to pray without ceasing. In the foreword by Father Thomas Hopko, he writes, "Life is communion with God, personal, direct, immediate, real, painful, peaceful, and joyful. It tells us that ceaseless prayer in pursuit of God and communion with Him is not simply life's meaning or goal, the one thing worth living for, but it is life itself. It tells us that Jesus Christ is this life, and that constant, continual, ceaseless prayer in His name opens the door to the divine reality and puts us in immediate contact with the one who is the source, substance, and goal of our life and our very life itself. It is this divine reality that guides and directs me in all ways, and now it takes me back to the land Yoganandaji so beautifully described and were the last words he uttered in his divine incarnation as he entered Mahasamadhi. The borderland of my India expanding into the world. Hail, mother of religions, lotus, scenic beauty, and sages. The wide doors are open, welcoming God's true sons through all the ages, where Ganges, wood, Himalayan caves, and men dream God. I am hallowed, my body touched that sod." With those words, Master began turning to his right, and he dropped the body right there. When Swami Ram Dass began his pilgrimage, he was told inwardly that God, his Ram, was taking him all over India. Quoting from Papa, "It was for sadhana, why should he go elsewhere? If it was for sadhana, why should he go elsewhere? He could have practiced at home. Still, God wanted him to go. Ram Dass did not ask him why he was being taken away, but he himself whispered in Ram Dass's ear, 'Ram Dass, I am taking you from place to place, not because you have to renounce everything, but because you have to see that everything is my form. You have to go to householders and tell them that they need not renounce worldly life in order to realize me.'" To begin with the right attitude and maintain it throughout the pilgrimage yields the greatest, the highest results, even as Papa so lovingly and dedicatedly followed to the letter his Ram's every command. This is the fifth time that I've been directed to India, a spiritual homeland for me. Besides the tremendous ideals of yoga, such as articulated in the Bhagavad Gita, there have so deeply inspired me. There are also the holy sites and saints whose darshan I have been blessed with. When I left Anandashram last, Swami Satchidananda, my second spiritual mother, said it was unlikely that we would meet again in the body. True to his word, he left the body since that last meeting. It was heart-wrenching to leave him at that time, but I felt the inner direction to return to all of you, and I left with his kind permission. Now, nearly 7 years later, I am directed to return to India. Carla and I will spend some time up north for Lari Mahasaya's Mahasamadhi and birthday anniversaries, September 26th and 30th, at Swami Keshavananda's ashram in Haridwar. We previously made friends with wonderful devotees there many years ago, and now we shall return. We will be staying at accommodations connected with Anandamoy Ma's Mahasamadhi Temple not far away in Kankal. After a northern tour, we shall have the darshan of Swami Vishwananda in Bangalore and then arrive at the abode of bliss, Anandashram, in time for Swami Satchidananda's birthday. There we plan to remain for the balance of our time, unless directed otherwise, for we are ever at his whim. As Papa so truly said truly, you do not need to leave hearth and home to practice God remembrance. To make your life a sacred journey, regard each and every aspect of it as steps to your full realization, the attainment of your life's greatest aim. I will take you in my heart as I know I shall remain in yours. In the constant thought of the One, may you ever be forever blessed in your pilgrimage back to your complete God realization. And from Master's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, this comes from chapter 12, stanza 5, and the literal translation, those whose goal is unmanifested increase the difficulties. Arduous is the path to the absolute for embodied beings. Master's in spiritual interpretation. The path of the worshipper of the unmanifested infinite is very difficult. He must practice stringent renunciation and relinquish all bodily attachment from the very beginning. The worshipper of a personal God, on the other hand, utilizes step-by-step methods of realization gradually to attain his goal. It would seem that God likes the personal relationship with the devotee. The path of self-realization is easier for the man who concentrates on God as the Heavenly Father or Cosmic Mother, possessing human qualities, and sees the divine eminence in creation. It is very hard for a human being to renounce all earthly identifications and to realize God as the unmanifest absolute. He who is born in the world of forms can scarcely attain true formless conception of spirit. The worshipper of a personal God tries to fill his heart with divine love without courting the hardships of a renunciant's life. He loves God so deeply that gradually all desires for the lesser happiness of the senses leave him. The more he feels the love of God, the less he is interested in sense pleasures. The natural method of renunciation of lesser pleasures is to taste the superior joys of spirit. And then continuing on with stanzas 6 through 7. For those who venerate me, giving over all activities to me, thinking me as the doer of all actions, contemplating me by single-minded yoga, indeed, O offspring of Pritha, Arjuna, I become long their redeemer to bring them out of the sea of mortal births. And the spiritual interpretation, The yogi disconnects his mind from the disturbing activities of breath with its 21,000 daily inhalations and exhalations. By quieting his heart through practice of Kriya Yoga, he can disconnect his breath and mind from the senses and dissolve his ego in the perception of the Blessed Soul. The yogi may also become united with divine bliss by listening to the cosmic sound of the Holy Ghost or Om, and by meditating deeply upon it and becoming one with it. The yogic method of concentrating on the divine voice of God, the cosmic sound of Om, which is the abode of all truth, and then meditating upon it and becoming one with it, is superior and more reliable path than the Vedantic method by which one concentrates on affirmations of Vedantic or Vedic lore and thus becomes one with them. The latter method is inferior because of the possibility of misinterpretations of scriptural truths or the errors in comprehending them. A Kriya Yogi, one who has attained soul perception through the meditation on Om, continuously realizes the omnipresent spirit behind all souls. He becomes concentrated by a single-minded union. Such yogis find that the perception of the infinite leads to final emancipation. Once the yogi becomes fixed in the changeless spirit, he is no longer subject to the changes of births and deaths, of good and evil karma. These two stanzas are describing how, again, the yogi reaches God by concentration on the definite expression of God, or the cosmic sound as taught by self-realization technique, the gradual and easy steps of scientific yoga. And reading from Kabir, I hear the melody of his flute, and I cannot contain myself. The flowers bloom, though it is not spring, and already the bee has received its invitation. The sky roars and the lightning flashes. The waves rise in my heart. The rain falls and my heart longs for my Lord. Where the rhythm of the world rises and falls, thither my heart has reached. There the hidden banners are fluttering in the air. Kabir says, my heart is dying, though it lives. Kabir here is talking in poetic imagery, but Master is exactly describing. I hear the melody of his flute, and I cannot contain myself. The flower blooms, though it is not spring, and already the bee has received its invitation. This is the melody of his flute, of Krishna's flute, is the Om. And it is heard, perhaps if you are right-handed, first of all in your right ear, but then at the back of your head. I hear this sound continuously. It is always with me. And it is the sound of cosmic vibration, something that is going on all around us all the time. There is a substratum to this entire universe that makes it a play of light, of sound, in the most beautiful terms possible. We chose at one point in our incarnation into some form of being. It doesn't have to be a physical being. It could have been a causal, it could have been an astral. But in this material form, we find the expression of going the furthest away from God in the sense that we have divorced ourselves from God. In this great divorce, we find ourselves living as an individual life that seems to be separated from our Creator. And then when we're in trouble, oftentimes we cry out to our Creator as if He's responsible for all the things that we have done. To live in harmony and union with God, it was His purpose from the very beginning. However, He also, as individual aspects of Himself, gave Himself free will. Now, you might question His judgment when you see what we've done with that free will at times. However, this is His play. And the thing is that whatever happens in this outer play of the world, of light and shadow, of high and low, good and bad, there is this substratum of Om vibration That is bliss. This entire creation, believe it or not, is actually an expression of bliss. It is a blissful explosion. And it is a profusion of bliss. The bliss underlies everything that is. Now, the fact that we may not be fully aware of this just is simply a statement that we ourselves have separated ourselves from God. Now, we may not remember the exact moment of doing this. But as the Buddha, who went through all his various incarnations, as he went the route of full realization, discovered all the different incarnations he had been through, and therefore he saw in that flash of a moment that everything that had happened in a human sense was part of the law of cause and effect. And it set into motion certain things. Now, we can see that in a very simple kind of a way. When you're living your life day to day, and you're tempted with a certain thing, perhaps it is not to tell the full truth, or somehow maybe you're kind of guided to steal something or do something that's against what is called dharma, doing the right thing, the righteousness. Then you will put a film, a wall between you and God. And every time you go against that inner prompting, that inner light, that inner knowing of what is right and what is wrong, and you go against that, you will put a thicker layer between you and God. Now, this is not God punishing you. It is you punishing yourself. You yourself are creating those walls. And also, you yourself may tear those walls down. You may get rid of them completely, fully, finally, and never have them erected ever again. And what will you experience when you do this? You will experience this springtime coming into your heart, even though it's not spring. The smell of spring, the feel of spring, and the bee inside of you is the devotee. And the devotee recognizes that the flowers are ready and open, and you drink deeply from that bliss. That flower of bliss, of beauty, of joy, of light, everything that is good and noble and wonderful about life is contained within the positive aspect of God. And so we begin to our journey upon this. We begin our pilgrimage upon this in a conscious kind of a way. And as we continue, the sky roars and the lightning flashes, and the waves arise in my heart. Now, the sky roars is this wonderful, tremendous sound of God that happens as you go in. And you hear these different sounds as you go up the spinal cord. At one time, you'll hear this ocean roar. That's from the fifth chakra. And it'll sound, if you've ever stood next to the ocean when it's really, the waves are crashing in there, what a tremendous sound it can make. This is you as well. This is what happens inside of you. And so you go inside of yourself and you hear the sound of the ocean roaring inside. The lightning flashes as you concentrate here at the ajna, the third eye point. You feel yourself there at first looking into pure darkness. But then as you concentrate deeper, you'll see different lights begin to appear there. And at first, they're simply visions that you see. But gradually, they'll form themselves, and you'll see a beautiful light of gold, or you'll see a beautiful light of deep blue, or a silvery pearlescent kind of light. And as Master described, these can form themselves into cave-like apparitions. And so you approach the gold cave first, because that's the pure light of creative spirit that is in all of creation, and it's perfect and it's beautiful, and you see that, and it's like a cave 50 feet across. And then you feel yourself traveling and merging into that golden light, and as you do so, you become aware that within that golden light there's a beautiful blue cave that's about 25 feet across. You come up to it, and you see that, and you see this beautiful blue light. And as you look upon it, you merge yourself into that, and it's as if you're traveling through a tunnel. And then you come to that silvery point of light, that five-pointed star that is within. And at first, it may seem like a distant star that you see. When Dr. Lewis, one of Master's first devotees here in America, where every day that he went to work, he went up some steps, there was a landing with a seat there, and then you went up another series of steps to his office. And every morning, when he went to work, he would go and he would sit on that landing and he would sit there and look at for that star until he saw it. And then he would proceed and he would go up and enter into his practice. So, you know, it'd be a wonderful dentist to see, wouldn't it, who did that kind of practice every single day. And there's a funny story about the first time that he had that experience. It was the first time that he met Master, and it happened to be Christmas Eve. And the tradition with Dr. and Mrs. Lewis was that they would get a tree, and they would decorate it together, and have a lovely evening of it, and have a nice dinner and all the rest of it. Well, Master, not sure how Dr. Lewis heard about Master, but he did. And so he went for an individual interview with him. And one of the questions that had been weighing on his mind is that he had read in the Bible, "Let thine eye be single, and thy whole body shall be filled with light." But he didn't know what that meant. Nobody had ever taught him the truth behind the parables. And so he asked Master about it, and Master turned down the lights, and he reached out, and he touched Dr. Lewis on the ajna, the third eye point. And he showed him there the star, and he saw the star shining so brilliantly. Well, he was so caught up in this experience and talking with Master that the time just flew by. And it was very late by the time that he was coming home. And as the story goes, Mrs. Lewis was so mad, so enraged when him coming home so late that she was standing behind the door with a rolling pin, ready to teach him a little wisdom about getting there on time. But when she saw how he was filled with so much light and obviously transfigured in some way, then she set down the rolling pin and everything was all right. But Master used to give them a bad time about that and bring that up once in a while. So we see this light. And those are the lightning flashes. Master wrote the song, "Oh, what lightning flash flickers in thy face, Mother. Oh, what lightning flash." And it is this beautiful light. Sometimes it comes like a lightning flash, but other times it comes just as a steady burning of a light. And you go into it. See, it's difficult to describe exactly how this happens, but you learn to steady your mind upon these things when they come. It is the light of God, it is the sound of God, and it is the feeling of God. Now, Mother went to Master one time, and she had a difficulty because she wasn't having many of these visions and hearing these things as Master had talked about. And she was concerned, and so she told Master, she says, "I don't see things and I don't hear things the way I hear other devotees talking about. But I feel things, and when I feel things, if it's something about the future, it comes true, and if it's something about God, I know the truth of it." And so Master told her a wonderful thing. He said, "To see God is good. To hear God is better. To feel God is to be one with Him." And so if these experiences aren't all coming, but we're feeling our union, our connection with God, then just leave it to God for whatever experiences are to come to you. I remember the first time that I saw the spiritual light, and I saw the star. I just was lying in bed, actually, and just thinking about God. And suddenly this beautiful five-pointed star, very large, in my ajna appeared. And it stayed there for a decent amount of time, 4 or 5 minutes. And I was looking at it, and I opened my eyes, and I closed them to see whether it's still there, and it was. But I didn't feel anything with it. It was just a vision, and I thought, God, this isn't satisfying. This isn't enough. This is all right. I'm inspired by it. Hadn't been initiated into Kriya Yoga for too long. And so I was inspired by that. But I wanted so much more. And so it was just a step in the path. So we shouldn't get overly concerned with visions. Even visions of saints and great spiritual personalities. They're wonderful, but they should be inspiring to take us further, deeper into God consciousness. You see, we can get caught up in the cosmic aspect of God, of all the various aspects of creation. But we've been given a remarkable gift, something you might even think of as impossible, an impossible gift, and yet it is true, that we have direct access to the Creator Himself. We don't have to go through this creation. We don't have to understand every little God-blessed thing about how this creation works. We can find God dwelling right within us. And this is really a remarkable thing when you think about it. So when these things come, let them be an inspiration to go deeper, to go further, to find our complete and total union with God and not get sidetracked with any of these kinds of things that can happen along the way, because they can be sidetrack you and can even get you into trouble. So the sky roars and the lightning flashes, the waves arise in my heart, the waves of devotion. Your heart opens up, and you start to feel this tremendous sense of devotion for God. Now, there was a time when I didn't think that I had any love in me at all. I felt completely empty. If you asked me what the definition of love was, I couldn't give you an answer, not at all. And then one night, God awakened it in me, and it was a very painful, excruciating experience as this heart center opened. It felt like my heart was going to split in two. And I couldn't bear it any longer, and I just cried out to God to make something happen, and what He did was He made the pressure even worse. And finally, it split open, and I felt this outpouring of love that really is just indescribable. I felt not drunk with it, that is insufficient. I was swimming in an ocean of it. And what I learned, what God taught me through this, is that love is both a noun and a verb. It is a noun. It is a state of being. It is a pure state of being. It doesn't require any relationship. We're used to thinking of being in relationship with someone or something in order to feel that love, and we feel that love going out towards that person. Maybe a child, it may be a lover, it may be somebody special in our life. But in this case, it is just a pure state of being. It is just love itself. It's not expressing itself toward anyone in particular. It's not even in movement. It is just a pure ocean of it. And I felt it saturate the air that was around me. And everything that was within my perception was a vibration of this love. So this love, this wave of love begins to open up, and then it also is a verb. So it also expresses itself out, and you feel that love flowing out to this one and that one. They can be very close to you, or they can be at a great distance, and it makes no difference. At one point, when I was taking my leave of Swami Satchidananda, and he said, remember, he says, you are always here with me. And it's the truth. It's the truth. How can we miss someone when we are really right there with them in spirit? In spirit, there is no time nor space. It transcends it. And so in spirit, when you rise up in spirit, you feel that love. You feel that oneness. Now, if you have a yearning for God, a yearning, a desire that is growing inside of your heart, nurture it. Let it grow. Because that is God yearning for Himself within your form. That is an expression of love, even though it is painful. And this is something to realize, is that the things that are painful in our life are also, can be, when they are attuned to God, are extremely uplifting and purifying. So there is nothing to be afraid of. There is nothing to be afraid of. You should not hold back from any spiritual experience. It is the human ego that tells you you're going to lose something, something's going to be denied you, and you're going to miss out on the party, on the happening, whatever's going on out there. But really, you know, this world just revolves around and around. And it's really the same story, that faces change, the names change. You can open up the newspaper today, and the very same things could have been written about 60, 100, 200, 2,000 years ago. The names would be different. The faces would be different. But it's exactly the same dynamics. This world just continues on its course. And if you're waiting for this entire world to become realized before you choose to become realized, you're going to be waiting a long time. And do you want to bind yourself to this world in that way? When you bind yourself to God first, then it is safe for you to go out and explore all the things of this world as you attune yourself to God. Sometimes people imagine God to be a dictator. Oh, I have to submit myself to His will. Oh, He gets His way in all the things. What about me? And it's a lack of understanding. Love is not like that. When you love somebody and you want to serve them, you don't feel like you're sacrificing things in that sense for them. You take great joy in their joy. You want them to be happy with all of your heart, your mind, and soul, and you'll do anything to help them into that happiness, real happiness. And that's not submitting yourself to someone else. That's submitting yourself to love. And it's totally different. When you think of loving God and surrendering yourself to Him, you're not surrendering to a dictator. You're surrendering to the ultimate expression and the state of being of love itself. And you are happy to do. Peggy Dietz, one time, she was talking about being with Master up in Mount Washington, and she says, it is our greatest joy to please Him. Master, meaning Master. Our greatest joy to please Him. And that is definitely how I felt, and so many of us felt about Mother as well. It was our greatest joy to please her in any small way that we could. I remember one time that she was giving a Christmas present to Dr. John. She was buying him some wood for his wood-burning furnace. And I said, well, Mother, why don't you let me buy it? And you present it as a gift. She says, no, it's my gift. I have to buy it. She wanted me to go and pick it up and deliver it. And I had to surrender to that. It would have been my greatest joy to be able to purchase that for her and then for her to give it through that name. But that's, you see, she had that kind of sense of propriety about how things work. And she was exactly right. So when you live out of love, submission is not a matter of surrendering yourself to some dictator or something. You surrender yourself to love and attunement with love. And so these are the waves that arise within the heart. And then the rain falls. The rain is joy. And the rain comes down and it begins to fall. My heart longs for my Lord. You see, that yearning comes in. And you feel yourself yearning for God with everything that you have. Where the rhythm of the world rises and falls, thither my heart has reached. There the hidden banners are fluttering in the air. You go beyond the things of this world. You go right into the very core of it. The problem isn't that with the world. Sometimes we think, well, the world is the problem here. If I didn't have to deal with this world, I wouldn't have to, be in the state of suffering or the state of ignorance, or I'd be able to really focus my attention upon God. In a way, in a very true way, it's not the world that's a problem. It's that you haven't gone deeply enough into this world. It's very same true with your own human ego. It's not that your human ego is the problem. It's that you haven't delved far enough. Because when you break the surface and you go underneath the surface, then you find that substratum of pure gold, pure spirit. And the blue of the Christ or of Krishna. And the silvery, white, pearlescent light of God. The problem isn't with that. The problem is that you haven't delved far enough. You haven't gone far enough. You haven't explored deep enough. So really identify what the difficulty is. I think it was the inventor Eastman who invented the Eastman Kodak camera. And if I have the name right, it's been a long time since I've read the story, but I think so. And he had a belief. He said, if you properly define the problem, then that's 90% of it solved. And he said, that's the key. And so he had developed this instant Polaroid developing film. And he had such great faith that he had properly defined the problem that he had built a factory. And the factory was all ready to go. And yet he hadn't solved the problem, but he felt that he had properly defined the problem. And so when he finally solved it, the factory was built, ready to go, and they went right into production. Because he had this kind of faith in his own process around this. When you have properly defined the problem of what is ignorance, the problem is not your body, the problem is not the position that you are in this world. These are not the problems. The problem is that you have not gone far enough. That's what meditation is for, is to go deeper, to break through those barriers. You run up against them, surely. You'll run up against brick walls that you yourself have erected. But the power of God is infinite and is equal to the task of tearing down any kinds of walls. Master used to say that God does a third, the Guru does a third, and you do a third. But we still need to do our part. We need to get in there. We need to work. We need to do more. As you dive deeper, as you go into the ultimate of God, then you will find yourself swimming in that ocean of love, swimming in that ocean of bliss. You'll feel God permeating you through and through and through. Now, one of the sayings here that I read from the introduction to the Way of the Pilgrim was that God comes as pain. And that may seem like a strange thing to us because we see pain as something to be avoided. And truly, we don't have to go out, we don't have to seek it. But when it comes and it finds its way to our door, not to turn away from it, but to bring God to bear upon it. Find your connection with God, even when you're in the pain, whether it's mental pain, emotional pain, or physical pain. Don't be afraid of it. And you don't have to dive into it and just immerse yourself and drown in it either. But bring God into it. Find God, even when you're in the pain. The first time that I was at Anandashram, I was in a grave situation, health-wise. I was very, very sick, and thanks to Swamiji giving me some little tiny white pills, whatever may have been in them, may have been nothing in them other than his blessings and his love. And that's fine, because that was sufficient. But eventually I recovered. My tongue was black and I was burning up with fever and it was a very difficult time. And I was talking to Papa in this feverish state and I said, Papa, you said that pain and bliss are the same. But I don't feel that right now. Show that to me. How is that possible? And believe it or not, Papa lifted me up in consciousness and I felt him there. We were both standing above this body. And we took hands and he had this big toothless grin and we just started dancing around and around and I felt such tremendous bliss. Now my body was still in pain. But I felt the bliss, you see. And Papa would so immerse himself into this bliss, constantly chanting God's name. And his feet could be lacerated when he was in the wandering life. His feet could be lacerated. A humorous story about he and Ram Charan Das. Ram Charan Das represents most of us. But he's very sincere. And he's very desirous of being with Papa wherever he goes, and Papa even tries to send him away at times, and he won't go. But they're walking along on these sharp stones, and over just a few feet away is his path. Well, to Ram Charan Das' mind, and most of ours, it looked like, well, the path is the way to go. It's smooth, it's dirt, and their feet were cut and these stones were sharp. And he says, Papa, why don't we just travel over there? And Papa said, Ram, calling everyone Ram, you do what you choose. Ram Dass is guided to walk here. And so Ram Charan Das very dutifully followed along with Papa, even though there is a smooth path over there. Now, for Papa, he felt bliss. That's how he described it. He must have been aware of some pain. But he felt just total and complete bliss. And when he would get someplace, there would be somebody there who would begin to work on his lacerated feet. They were in terrible shape, pulling thorns out and healing up the cuts. And Papa was unconcerned. He was just chanting Ram Nam, and he's floating in this sea of bliss, you see. God can lift you beyond any situation, but you have to dedicate yourself completely to Him. If you're battling something, if you're battling an addiction, if you're battling anything at all, then just chant God's name. Now, any name will do in this sense. Papa said and told the story about the man who went to get diksha or initiation from a great guru. But he felt very shy about it because he hadn't lived the life. And so he was at a great distance. He didn't want to get too close. He was afraid that the master would send him away. But he was looking just for any drop, anything at all that came from the master. And he heard a word. He heard the word pestle, like a mortar and pestle. And he took it with complete and total faith, and he started chanting, pestle, 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 as the name of God. Chanted it over and over and over again. And so the story goes that one day, this golden pestle came down from heaven and picked up this devotee and took him all the way back into heaven. You see, it doesn't make any difference what you call God, by what name. God listens to the heart. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's Allah, or Ram, or Nirvana, or any of the other thousands of names that we have for God. It is the purity of the heart. It is the devotion. It is the love for God that draws God like an irresistible magnet. Do you know that your love imprisons God? He cannot resist you. He's pulled to you with a magnetic power that he cannot, nor does he want to resist it. And he comes to you. Larry had recommended a wonderful movie to us called Dharma. And it's about a rather orthodox priest. And through circumstances, he adopts this baby boy that's outside of his caste. And I won't say too much about it in case you want to watch it. I highly recommend it. It's an East Indian movie, and it's subtitled. But it's a beautiful movie. But through the experience that he has to make a choice. He has to make a choice out of love or out of just simply following the scriptures, as Master told here in the Gita stanza, that to follow God takes you beyond just the orthodox beliefs. And that your life has to be lived a certain way, and if it's not, then you're polluted. Or if you're around certain people, then you're polluted. I remember there was a young man who had had some connection with the ashram, and he had a mental illness, and so there was a Western devotee there, and she asked, knowing I had some background working with mentally ill people, would I come and see him? And so I did, and I went to the family home. And they didn't know what to do with him because when he went into manic episodes, he would go out into the neighborhood and he'd create a nuisance. And so they chained him to the wall. And there he was, those large links of chain that went from the wall, that was screwed into the wall, went around his waist, and was padlocked there. And in talking to him, he was all right with it. He says, I don't want to create a problem for my parents. And so I was able to get some help and for him and a psychiatrist interested who was willing to help treat him, who was connected with the ashram as well. And then one day he was well enough and he's able to come back to the ashram. And he wasn't quite all right, but he was pretty good. And we went to see his guru. He had a different guru in an ashram there in Kanangan. He was a lovely man. I liked him very much. But when we were there at the ashram, he had created quite a nuisance of himself in the past. And they had asked him to leave, and it was only because I asked if he could come, did they allow him to come. And some of the people there, very sincere devotees, they go, I don't know how you do it. How do you associate with him? We're supposed to see God in everyone, but I don't see God in him. You see? You see what the problem is? It's difficult. We get caught up in the drama. We get caught up in personalities. And so even for people who are sincerely trying to realize the universal vision, this is a difficult thing to do. But when you look behind the passing show and you see the individual, not just in their current state, but you see them as if you are looking up from a very high distance, and you see behind them all of their path that has taken them to this moment. And then you see the path going out before them, and it may be even a crooked path that they follow, but eventually arrives in the horizon of the rising sun and their own realization. And one day, surely one day, they will come to that point where they will see in themselves what you see in them now, which is God made manifest, and that God is more powerful than the personality, than the individual, than any particular current state someone may be in. God is that powerful. He's created this universe. And when he chooses, he can awaken himself in anyone and draw them unto himself. So let us think of our own pilgrimage in life, the trails that have brought you to this point, the trails and the choices that as you look further down the road and where they will take you. And let it be that that trail takes you to your greatest light that you know at this time. And that it's filled with God remembrance. And you will be filled with the peace and the joy and the bliss of God. This is my greatest prayer, my greatest wish for you, every one of us, that we may live in that light and that love, that joy, that peace. Know the presence of God is with us at any and all times. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. Be it so. I want to tell you, setting out on this journey, that my greatest joy is this. It's being coming together. Thinking on my way up to the Bellingham class this last time, I thought they used to have the commercials when somebody wins the Academy Award or they go win the Super Bowl or something, now I'm going to Disneyland. You know, that's a big payoff. And I thought, oh, coming together in satsang with devotees, that's my greatest joy, greatest payoff. So that we shall remain together in each other's hearts, there's no doubt. And that you will surely go with me as we go to these different sacred sites. Christine had a particularly powerful experience at Kesha Ashram, where we'll celebrate Lari Mahasya's Mahasamadhi Day. In fact, we didn't know about Kesha Ashram. We read about Swami Keshavananda in the autobiography of the yogi. If you remember, he's kind of a bulky yogi with a big white beard, big red hair. He's standing with Master in front of a large pillars of an ashram that he had in Vrindavan, which is near where Krishna was. But he also had an ashram in Haridwar. And after Lari Mahasya left the body, they cremated him. And he brought some of the ashes and brought them to that ashram there in Haridwar. So that's the place where we'll go. But we didn't know about that. And Christine, this is a trip that she took there with Phyllis before she and I went there together. And she's having a very difficult time. It's a very dark, rough time for her traveling in India. And she got up in the middle of the night and went down to the steps that take you down into the Ganges right there. The river's flowing by. The sadhu came walking by and struck up a conversation. Well, that's quite unusual. Sadhus don't usually do that. And he spoke very good English, and he said, "Do you know that Lori Mahasha's samadhi site is just right here, right behind us?" And she said, "No." And he took her and he showed her where the ashram was, and there's nothing really indicating anything as such. There's an ashram there, but not indicating that it's anything connected with Lori Mahasha in any kind of way. And so it was from that description that I had wanted to visit that place. And when I went to India, I'd been there for some days, went to Delhi and then went to Hardwar. And I was walking along on the Ganges and just looking for spiritual India, looking for that spiritual current there. And I was enjoying the river. There was a sadhu who was sitting off to the side, and he motioned me over, and I came over, and he gave me some mala beads, and I thought, "Oh, that's quite nice." And he says, "Now, that'll be 300 rupees." Which is quite a bit more. That's about 10 times the going rate that you pay. He says, "Well, it's filled with blessing." And I just thought, this man is nothing but a salesman in orange clothing. And I was really missing the feeling of spiritual India, really feeling desperate to find it. So they sell these little boats made out of leaves. It has a candle and a flower in it. They're quite nice. And the tradition is you light the candle, you put it into the Ganges, you say a prayer, and you release it, and you let it go. And your prayers are supposed to be answered then. And so I did that. I said, "Oh, Babaji, in the form of Gangama, the Mother Ganges, show me spiritual India." So I continued and walked back to the hotel there, and when I got back, there was a guide from India who was there, and he was with another group, but he had known of my connection with this Kriya lineage, and he said, "Oh, did you want to see Lori Mahasha's samadhi site?" I said, "Yes, absolutely." I didn't know where it was. And so it was a short walk away and went into it, and it was just happened to be a Lori Mahasha's Maha Samadhi date. And there was a whole group of 20 people or so sitting there meditating, and so I just joined the ranks. I sat down, meditated with them. And when their service was over, of course, they wanted to know about me, and we just formed this wonderful, as a Yogada Satsang group that was there. And we formed this wonderful time that we were there until Lori Mahasha's birthday, which is on the 30th. And just treated me like royalty, just so lovely. So hoping to go back and make some of those same connections. We'll be there on that Maha Samadhi date, the 26th of September. But my plan is since that was definitely a powerful place, what an unusual thing to happen for Christine, and she's been struggling so hard. I can't tell you how brightly her light is shining, just so beautifully. And when she speaks, it oftentimes reminds me of Mother. Just so definite, so powerful in the way that she's saying things. And her own realization, and it's wonderful. Mm. But her body is really very weak. She's improving. She wasn't able to feed herself 2 weeks ago, and she can feed herself now. And the day after we were up there this last week, she was able to go out to the porch for the first time in a wheelchair. But very, very weak. And God has to see to it. I told her just bumping along on the bottom won't do. She needs to get wind under her wings and start to soar in her physical body. And that is my definite wish for her and desire. And be it according to God's will, that we would love to see her soar in the body. She's just a bright light in this world and to all the people who know her. So my plan is to buy one of those little leaf boats with a candle, since that was a powerful spot for her, right at that very same spot where that sadhu told her about Lori Mahasha's samadhi site. So please do keep her in your prayer. Keep little Levi in your prayer. I think he'll be all right, but let's keep him in our prayers. and Sarah Garland and all of this world, you know. The real suffering in this world, as the Buddha correctly analyzed, is separation from God. He didn't use the word God. He didn't want to get confused with the notion that people limit God in certain ways, but that's what he was speaking about. And so let us keep deep in our prayers this world, that it should be uplifted and enlightened. Let's keep that always in our prayers. And anytime we hear about any difficulties, anything at all, bring God's, you know, Jesus said, I of myself am nothing. It is my Father who doeth the works. And I feel that so deeply in myself. God takes me right down and scrapes me out completely empty. And I know that of myself I am nothing. He proves it to me daily. And yet I know that with him all things are possible and that he doeth the works. So don't feel like you have to save this world, or you think, where in the world would I get the power to do that? You are an instrument of God. Never forget that. And that when you look out to this world through his eyes, through his love, through his spirit, then you allow him to use your form in whatever way he chooses to help to transform this world. It can be in small ways, you know. Mother should be Saint Teresa of Calcutta said such a wonderful thing. She said, there are no large acts of love, there are only small acts of love. So don't think you have to go out and save the world in any grand big schemes, and if you don't, it doesn't count. Look for small acts of love all through the day, and you'll be blessed. You'll be blessed. So let us close with our closing prayer that Mother taught us. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, I feel the wonder and the beauty of thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet. And surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my body. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. My communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am he. Forever bless you and keep you.